You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Mark, I want us to turn our attention now to what really is honestly quite a sad conversation. A sad conversation for a lot of us. Last night, we went to sleep hearing about the gruesome murder of Andilen Tuteli, fondly known as Lulu. He lived in the Eastern Cape, and it's believed that his death is a result of yet another homophobic hate crime. In fact, I was looking at the front page of one of the newspapers in the Eastern Cape, the Herald, and the headline is "Gay Man Mutilated and Remains Burned." And just 2 weeks ago, we spoke about the body of Spamandla Khoza that was discovered in a ditch near his home. He had been stabbed multiple times following an alcohol-induced attack, apparently over his sexuality. The suspect that is arrested in connection with the murder is expected to make his second court appearance on Wednesday. And this is but one case. In fact, these are the two cases I'm just mentioning in a series of brutal hate crimes targeted at members of the LGBTQI plus community. Where are these crimes occurring? Who is committing them? How do we teach each other as members of community, as the human race, that we need to accept that there are people that will be different to us? And there are people that we will be different to. And I want to hear your thoughts on how do we raise awareness, right? Individually, what is it that we can do to start teaching our children, to start not even teaching, raise awareness amongst our children, raise awareness amongst our friends, amongst our family members, to accept people of different sexualities as normal human beings, because that's what they are. They're just human beings like any other person who deserves to live their truth. How do we do that? I want to hear your thoughts on 011-883-0702. WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702. And you can also send us an SMS on 31702. Jabu Pereira is a director at Iranti. This is an LGBTQI plus NGO. Jabu, thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Clement. Thank you for having me on the show.
And Dr. Ndumiso Ngidi is a lecturer in the School of Education at UKZN. Dr. Ngidi, thank you so much for also availing yourself. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Clement, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, I want to start with you, Dr. Ngidi, because you have done research into the space around the attacks on members of the LGBTQI plus community, and you have looked at geography and the location where these attacks happen. Where are we seeing these crimes being committed? Where are they most prevalent?
They are prevalent across the nation. So whether it's a resource-poor community or a suburban middle-class community, you still get remnants and traces of queerphobia, queerphobic attitudes, queerphobic bullying, and etc. But it seems that the murders, the killing of people who are self-identified as members of the LGBTI is largely located in our townships and other formerly marginalized resource-poor communities, such as the ones we've been hearing and seeing in the news. For example, the Mpuzuma with Spamandla Khoza. It was actually my cousin. With Lindotele and Mlazi. And now, last night, we heard of Andy, who was also brutally murdered and mutilated in a resource-poor community in the Eastern Cape. And I guess my argument would be that we need to look at these resource-poor communities. It's something is really happening there. It could be related to poverty, but I think it's much more bigger than just poverty as an isolated case.
So we've got legal protections in this country, Dr. Ngidi. We've got legal protections in the country. You know, participants in both settings seem to be reporting these similar experiences in terms of queerphobia and violence. These are participants in, whether you look at, you know, some locations in South Africa and Namibia, which is what your research focused on. What is going wrong? The rights are there, the legal protections are there. How is it not trickling down to the respective communities? Because often we celebrate South Africa as the first African country to legally recognize even same-sex unions, right? We are seen as this beacon of hope on the continent, you know, and the continent that largely still punishes same-sex couples harshly. Where is the disjoin? You know, what is the problem? Why is it not trickling down? Why is the awareness not being raised? Why are we not still accepting of each other on the ground?
So for me, it boils down to two words, Clement, information and awareness, as you actually say. Mm-hmm. So we have this progressive constitution, which protects the rights of everyone in the country, which stipulates that no one should be discriminated because of their gender, sexual identity, and any of the other identity markers that are available. But what often happens is this doesn't really translate into action, doesn't translate into attitudinal change at the ground level. So our constitution, for example, is hailed at the international level, but the experiences of people on the ground in South Africa, particularly those who are deemed marginal or minority, are not enjoying these protections and these rights that are prescribed in our constitution, simply because, one, there's not enough work to educate people, particularly in these remote, resource poor areas. Education, misinformation, but also all of these are grounded and confounded in a history of oppression that we've inherited from our apartheid past, and a history of violence that we still see, and a long history of post-traumatic stress that is inherent in our people, and so we don't see any movement in so-called poor communities, because often they are sidelined, as was in the past. Often resources are not being channeled through and into those communities. And so we also have LGBTI organizations all over South Africa. And funny enough, I was just talking to friends this morning. These organizations are here, and they should be and are doing important work. But it seems that they are largely located in areas that I don't want to say don't need them, but that they're basically preaching to the converted. Don't go into our churches, into a car.
And maybe the other issue, Dr. Ngidi, and this is where I want you to come in, Ejabu, is the problem could possibly be that the environment is not that welcoming for those LGBTQI plus organizations to set up in certain areas, the far-flung areas, meet with members of the LGBTQI plus community. So maybe we can say that, look, we need LGBTQI plus communities in every community, but is the environment allowing, or are people actually risking their lives by coming out to say, we are here as an institution that wants to celebrate but also protect, in a way or so, members of the LGBTQI community? Yes, Jabu?
Thanks, Clement. Yeah, and just to, before I just respond to that, I just want to, you know, pass my condolences to the families of Spamandla and Tutela and so many others that whose lives have been cut short in our society due to intense hate, homophobia, transphobia that prevails. And I think often, and as people from the LGBTI community might be listening in to the show and to you, I think we need to share that there's a common pain that is felt when people we don't know, but there's a connection to a sexual orientation, a gender identity, is killed. That vulnerability hits home very deeply to everybody, whether you're a parent, an uncle or loved one, to a relative that may be from the LGBTI community. So I think, you know, in a country like ours where there is so much collective trauma, whether it be about racism or the intense gender-based violence that women face in this country, whether it's homophobia and transphobia, we do need to look at the environment in which we live as people of this country who inhabit South Africa. And in that environment, there are many things that we need to look at. And I think there is, of course, a deep connection to just thinking about this very recent case of Ntutela being killed in Kwanabuzle in the Eastern Cape in Uitenhage. You know, it's impossible to not just take one's memory back to a 1985 moment where there's the Langa massacre and how people were killed there. So when we think about black lives, whether they be queer black lives or just black lives as a whole, and the disposability of pain and trauma, we know that this is beyond an issue of attitude. Mm. We know that there are many inherent layers of trauma that we embody in this country. And it's very, one could simply say this is a matter of interpersonal conflict, somebody hating another person because they're gay. But when you look at a deeper level, we also see an intense system by the state that only lends words to making us some kind of a rainbow nation of acceptance within a legal framework. But in practice, in actual practice, we have a deeply inherent homophobic and transphobic state, be it in the police system, where black lives don't matter when they're dead anyway because there's a prolonged investigation to why people are killed, or whether it be around services that are provided. And so when you look at the deep state, when you talk about homophobia in this country, then you begin to talk about an intentional act by the government to kill gay and lesbian and transgender people by the failure of them to deliver what is required to keep all people safe in this country. The Constitution right now, Clement, unfortunately, is not being used in the way that it should be used because it's not being costed in a way that ought to be costed. So we keep seeing LGBTI people being murdered at the ages of 18, 20, 16. Nobody, almost none of them, survived beyond an age of 35, 40. So when you celebrate a way of coming out or, you know, be joyful about who you are, it doesn't exist in a society that is already established to lessen your lifespan. I think when we do talk about geographies and context, I fully agree that there's an inherent problem in the way this government is responding to black LGBTI lives, to black lives overall in this country, to women. And you know, I think we're all fatigued by presidential speeches and good intentions with no actions. I think that is consistently what we're seeing in the loss of life in this country.
Dr. Nkiti, you know, part of when I was going through your research, you know, the people that you had spoken to, you concluded, you know, at you know, having looked at and spoken to the participants, that there are some male participants that engaged even in romantic relationships with women in order to conceal their same-sex desire, because, you know, the queer participants had to almost dress up and perform in certain ways that are appropriated by heterosexualism. And that suggests that their identity continues to be made invisible and that as individuals, they remain vulnerable. So how dare you come out and say, this is who I am and I want to celebrate who I am? Where do we start the conversation, Dr. Nkiti, given that context? Is it about teaching tolerance? Because I believe that when you talk tolerance, tolerance has limitations. And that's why we can talk about cases like Spamandla, where some people can tolerate that, okay, you are a member of the LGBTQI plus community, I can have a beer with you, but I cannot share it with you. Or we can be in the same space, but I cannot have a conversation with you. And once you strike that conversation, someone can respond in a negative and brutal way because their tolerance was only limited to you sharing that space. So we shouldn't tolerate one another. We're all human beings. We should be accepting of one another. Where do we begin that work?
Well, I think, Clement, it goes beyond just tolerant. As you said, I can tolerate you, but at arm's length.
Mm.
I still don't want to share a space with you. What we need to preach is like exactly what is prescribed in our constitution, the idea around human rights and the idea of respecting another person's bodily integrity, and therefore acceptance then starts to come from there. And as the previous speaker said, there are many layers to this. We are a traumatized society. We share a collective history of violence, of brutality that was enacted against the black body. And so we've inherited that. But what is now changing is that it is us, black people, seemingly using this violence against each other, or those that are perceived as the minority. And we see this in the form of killings of black young men who are identified as queer. But I think it also calls for our government to act. It's not enough for them to just put in the legislation and make beautiful speeches about our legislation and our constitution. I think we need to see them starting to reach out to communities, to reach out to the public, and condemning these acts and speaking and addressing these acts. We also have an issue of toxic masculinity in the country, because we have obviously traumatized masculinity that are inherent from because of the nature of the history we have. Also, those things need to be spoken into and find new ways of really introducing these alternative masculinities that are embracing loving kind and nurturing, so that we all can create livable spaces in our communities, in our families. But we also need to bring on board families and religious groups, because the core of the issue, I believe, starts at the home. And the home is often in South Africa supported through the structure or the institution of a church or any other religious institution. And those institutions, both the family, the church, needs to also just be approached and join forces and come together to say, we are condemning this. We are condemning this evil act, this evil deed.
Mm-hmm.
Until we all speak in a united collective voice, we'll still unfortunately continue to see spate of killings that have rendered us, the LGBTI community, living in fear to come out, and young people being trapped in the closet and having to remold, change their performance simply because they are scared to leave their truth.
Yeah, and sometimes Ajabu is not just doing the work as family units, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are institutions that also need to change their thinking. And we're not saying change their principles, but the way that they have addressed issues of the LGBTQI plus community, you know, institutions like churches, for instance, right? And that's the conversation we need to have about even the cultural beliefs sometimes that are there. Because as a family, we can have a conversation and create that awareness. But if the institutions that our family members are part of are not transforming in their thinking, then this is counterproductive.
Yeah. You know, Clement, I just want to go back very briefly to the issue about tolerance, because, you know, for me, I find that to be a very difficult concept of practice, because in a society where there's, you know, great levels of frustration, right, be it around poverty, unemployment, and that in many cases we see that the only way that men who are deeply frustrated exercise their power is through violence, and how that violence in its worst form becomes an act of bravery. In this recent case of Mtukela, the perpetrator who's arrested arrives in court wearing her cap. So it's not so much for me about the fact that we need to tolerate one another. I think we've been doing that in this country since the birth of apartheid and all of that. There's been a high level of degree of tolerance, but subsumed by that level of tolerance is the ongoing frustration and acts of violence. And so the deeper questions are about why does that the intensity of hate towards LGBTI persons translate to the death of somebody or to the rape of somebody or the mutilation of a body, etc. And what happens in those moments when this act happens? And I don't have the answers to why hate moves from a feeling of dislike to an act of murder. What is of grave concern is really the silence of the state. You know, we have the Department of Justice that is consistently playing games with our lives. You know, there's supposed to be a national task team that is well-resourced, that's supposed to look at this. Jeff Khadeh, they launched it, and it's now under the new ministry. So, you know, our lives are like political games to these departments.
I totally understand that. It's really been a frustration for a lot of people, Jabu. I've got an SMS here from someone who says, my daughter is 15 years old. She strongly believes that she's lesbian. I'm a parent. I'm 100% okay with it. And I always tell her that my fear is that she might get killed for her sexuality. What world should our children live in? My child is very outspoken and I'm very, very scared for her. That's really where people are because of us not wanting to accept of one another, right? People are scared. I mean, this parent is scared for her child because how do you support her and how do you assure her that she can live her truth? Dr. Ndumiso Ngidi, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. Lecturer in the School of Education at UKZN, and Jabu Pereira, thanks for also making time. Director at Iranti. It's an LGBTQI+ NGO.